childhood looks were all that mattered.
You have a year to find someone to love you.
Or stay like this forever.
Until one girl...
Pretty gruesome, huh?
I've seen worse.
...changed everything.
You were the most beautiful man I have ever met.
Beastly. Get it now on Blu-ray and DVD.
Hello, all you beasts out there, and welcome to Cinemarcade. This is the podcast about movies, video games, and the sparks that fly when those worlds collide. I'm faced like a burnt Lego, Steve Guntling. Today we are talking about the 2011 movie Beastly. Yes, if you're accessing your memory holes to see if you can find that one, you're good leaving it there. You're good leaving it in that little chasm from Inside Out where everything dies. Spoiler alert. Who else is here with us today?
I am a person who is very clearly a witch.
Well, you have that C around your eye.
Not a single moment of the movie is there a question about it.
It's Justin, by the way.
Yes.
That's his full name. But yes. Yeah, that's his nickname. That whole first chunk was your nickname. The rest of it is Justin. Who else is here with us as usual?
It's J-Ban, lover of Beauty and Beast tales normally.
Yeah, okay, all right. Also, I love that you put a lot of extra like twang on your voice. It's J-Ban.
It's my banjo
I feel like
voice.
I'm walking into a club in the 70s. It's cool. We have a special guest joining us here today, one of the many amazing, talented improvisers that we have the fortune to work with here in the Austin comedy scene. Who's joining us here today? Please say hello.
Hey, it's Whitney, lover of this movie, even though it's very bad.
Okay, yeah. All right. So Whitney chose this movie for us. We moved it around. Scheduled it for her. And I don't want to tip my hand about how I feel about this movie, but I am curious, why did you do this to me?
So I had only watched the movie in its full for the first time last night, but
okay.
I'd seen both Jenny Nicholson, who's a great YouTuber, has a video on it that I've watched probably like 20 times as I'm falling to sleep.
Okay.
I just find it very comforting, and how did this get made covered it. And I was just like, this seems like an excellent bad movie. I'd been exposed to it in pieces over the year and, finally got to watch it last night and was like, yep, this is wonderfully bad.
I will say, yeah, this is absolutely like the room of early 2010s like YA adaptations. This is a batshit terrible movie that makes it kind of baffling and kind of delightful and kind of infuriating all at the same time.
Well, it's so interesting because folklore. This story has been told a million different ways. I personally have read probably a minimum of 10 different Beauty and the Beast novels.
What is it that resonates with you about the story? I'm curious.
The resonation, like the classic myth is just such a, it's a story of being all like, of slowly being forced to get to know someone.
Sure.
As opposed
to proximity.
Forced proximity, yeah.
Surprise adoption.
Well, and honestly, it's like this person and like both people learn to love each other. And it's just like but the thing that I find really interesting about Beastly that and all the other versions of the Beauty and the Beast that I've read, they're telling it from the Beast's perspective. And the Beast is a dick.
He's a dick. Yeah.
And like he needs to be a dick for like this whole thing to have happened. And yet we follow him the whole time. I guess he has the biggest like arc, I guess.
He does, but when you take away the aloofness of the earlier versions mm-hmm. of the Beast character by like making him, you know, making Belle the focus, like you rob us a lot of that transformation because we're
For
watching
sure.
that transformation happening without her. The beauty in this case is pretty incidental to the plot. She could be anybody.
It's interesting, like more than any other Beauty and the Beast adaptation I've seen, we like spend a lot of time with the Beast in like seeing why he got cursed in the first place. Like usually that's just kind of like brushed over, like yes, he was cursed long ago because he was a dick, but this is like no, we see him fully being a bad person for like a half hour of the movie. Like,
bad,
a long time
bad to his housekeeper.
Yes,
he was a
who like raised him apparently. Like, it wasn't just like, yeah.
And it wasn't even like casually being a dick, like, oh, pick up my clothes or something. He was like jabbing her about her children's custody, like being, yeah, like, Jesus Christ, this kid's a piece of shit. Like, I know he's supposed to be, but yeah, you're right. The movie makes us spend a lot of time.
Turbo dick Chad?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, basically.
And like, he's like, the whole conceit is that he's like obsessed with his looks. Yeah. And like, and not just obsessed with his looks, but like obsessed in general with like beautiful people being like more, like, better.
Yeah.
Like, oh, like, this is correct. Like, beautiful people should lead society. That's like his whole campaign thing for their weird student government called the Green Party.
And people are going for it too, yeah, which is weird. It's not like it's basically that he might as well call it the fuck you party, but they're still way into it.
He could have been like so into his looks, but in a normal way. Like, no one is like how he was in the movie. Where he's we see his like social media profile at one point, and it says dislikes, fatty cakes, and I think like butts and guts or something.
Whereas, something like, gross like that.
There are,
yeah,
like guys who don't like, you know, curvy women and whatnot, but they are not like posting it under their, you know, some of them are, but like, yeah, you,
yeah,
know, like,
I've seen some clips, yeah, from Tinders.
Tinders. I absolutely was shocked because, one, I don't think I've ever seen any group of people that excited about student government before.
Never.
Let alone what is very clearly the worst student government all time.
This student government does throw, like, expensive bat mitzvah level parties. So I get, after this election happens, we go to this like very fancy like nightclub level party that the Green Party is throwing.
Yeah.
It's also confusing that it's a party thrown by the Green Party.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
The Green Party party.
So I thought it wasn't the Green Party. I thought it was the Green Committee.
Oh, you're correct.
That I think it's not just student government. That's like student council. I think it's literally an environmental committee. Yeah, that's what I got from it.
What, that makes even less sense.
So he was just running for the environmental committee of the school. And
he
was
yes.
Deal?
That's what he was.
A separate student.
So there's a separate student government, and he's just running for the president of the Green, the Environmental Initiative
Club.
Where
it would be very important to be attractive.
Yeah. Wait. So he's just a huge like open asshole to everybody, but he's into the environment, like he wants.
Is that why there were African dancers at the party? Because that was like their image of like, oh, we're taking care of the Africans. Like, zoom in this part. Yeah,
yeah.
It looked like the party from Batman and Robin.
It did actually.
Uma Thurman crashes in her big monkey suit.
But that's why the witch Mary Kate was like, yeah, it's Mary Kate, right?
It is Mary Kate.
Okay, Mary Kate was all like, we need. Yes, I am now. Wiser people than me have just determined it.
Just had to check.
Yeah, because Ashley was, I think, long out of the acting game at this point. Mary Kate held on a little longer and had a couple roles, but this was apparently her final.
This was
her
it.
Final role.
I forget which one went on to date the president of France, but one of them did. Anyway, sorry, we interrupted
you. It wasn't the president of France. He's like
the
president.
Brother of the president or something. Yeah,
I thought it was like the brother of like the L'Oreal. Company
could have been. I don't remember. I'm not.
Which is basically the French government.
I have to tell you, I'm shockingly not as up on this Olsen twins' social life as I should be.
We should get back to Mary Kate's role in the movie because it's incredible. She's just a witch at this high school
with a different wig in every single scene.
Like, literally, we have scenes where we're like, it's the same night or something, where we like cut away from her and come back, and she's in like a whole different like hair situation. I don't know if that's just like to convey to us that she is magic. I like to think that the costume person on this movie was just like so excited about making witch looks because they are great. She has like a different smoky eye in every scene, and she was just like, listen, I have to get all of these in here, even though Mary-Kate is barely in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I don't care if it doesn't make sense.
Let me backtrack just a moment.
Before we get too far off Mary-Kate.
Yeah.
Mary-Kate was married until 2-3 years ago to the half-brother of the previous of a former president of France.
Sarkozy, okay. Right? Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
And okay. So.
All right, let me backtrack to drop a couple of facts and figures about the movie.
Facts.
Beastly.
Yeah, we've gotten way down the rabbit
hole.
That's
all right.
Already.
Hey, look, we got excited and I'm okay with it. Beastly was released March 4th, 2011.
What's the budget?
Written and it was like 17 million.
You don't have
like
to answer that yet.
No, I know it. It was written and directed by Daniel Barnes with a Z. It stars Vanessa Hudgens, Alex Pettifer, Mary-Kate Olsen, Peter Krause, Lisa Gay Hamilton, Dakota Johnson, Regina King in some deleted scenes, and Neil Patrick Harris. Yeah, that's right. Oscar winner Regina King. King was cut out of this movie. Wow. Good for her.
What was her role? Do you know?
I don't actually know. Yeah, I think she was another student council member or something like that. But like, incredible. Yeah, they had to excise her from the movie. Fittingly, our career retrospective of the works of Alex Pettifer comes to a abrupt close this week. We kind of stumbled into like a twofer. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about Alex Rider Operation Stormbreaker because Justin made the most baffling Justice pick. I'm still a little like thrown by how random that pick was.
I still have like all of the books.
Yeah. That's great. That one threw me. But, we covered a little bit of his career on that one. That movie was poised to be kind of the big breakout movie for a 16-year-old boy, and then that movie tanked at both British and American box offices. And this seemed to stall out his career, but he suddenly became an in-demand fashion model and spent the next couple of years gaining some high-profile modeling gigs and starting to audition for more roles. Now, his mainstream breakout finally came in 2010 with he's like second billed in the movie Magic Mike. And
yeah.
He's kind of a forgettable character in that, but it is a high level like.
So he's
role.
Not the like main guy.
He's like the audience surrogate guy who brings
okay,
us
okay, so
into
he's,
the
so
world.
He's like the okay.
He's the ingenue.
He is like the main guy. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they call him the kid in that one, you know, and he was like
second to Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, exactly.
No, Matthew McConaughey has a tiny role.
Yeah, he's a supporting role.
Channing Tatum. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But truly still second to Matthew McConaughey.
This just reminded me
so good in that movie. That movie's awesome.
How great of a cast you would look up, you would think of for the Alex Rider movie. You look at that and go, what a great cast.
Could have been
Ewan McGregor. This is going to be a good time. And then it wasn't. And now I'm sad again.
We've got Peter Krause. We got Neil Patrick Harris.
A lot of talented people.
Vanessa Hudgens was like in her prime at this time. And is spending a lot of the movie trying to sound, I think, like more mysterious and adult thing.
Yeah, it was.
She looks, I don't know.
Yeah.
But this was the year, 2011 was looking to be the year that Alex Pettifer was kind of poised to break out as a movie star. He had two movies kind of back to back, both YA adaptations of very successful books. The first one was I Am Number 4, which came out
I read that book, but I never saw that movie.
Yeah. I think it's supposed to be very bad. I think it came out about a month before this movie came out. And that movie tanked at the box office, was eviscerated by critics, and they were singling out his performance for a lot of the negative reviews. And then Beastly came out. So Beastly is a modern-day rendition, as we
mentioned.
And it
absolutely cemented him in Hollywood
and
forever.
And now he's on our money. Yes. Beastly is a modern-day rendition of Beauty and the Beast based on a popular 2007 novel by Alex Finn. CBS Films acquired the rights and went into production immediately with the aim of having this movie released in 2008. They picked Daniel Barnes with a Z as a director. Barnes with a Z had a minor Sundance hit in 2008 called Phoebe in Wonderland, which like I've seen the DVD cover of. Like it's a girl with a sunflower. I haven't seen it, though. He was hired to adapt this. He made some changes from the book. The most significant change was the design of the main character, because in the book, he's an actual like Disney-style hairy beast monster. Like he looks like a bear.
That would make a lot more sense in many ways.
Yeah, it
like
would.
Like how adverse he is to traveling, not to skip ahead too far.
No,
like
please.
When he was still taught, really, like he is like scarred and tattooed. He looks weird for sure, but like it's New York City. I'm sure there's guys who just look like this walking around.
Sure.
And he acts like he cannot leave his home.
Yeah,
for
being
fear.
Mobbed.
Yeah. In. Which would make more sense if he was, like, an actual beast.
Yeah.
Right.
If he was half bear.
But, like, this was a peak era of making Beauty and the Beast adaptations where the Beast's disfigurement can in no way compromise the actor's hotness.
Yeah.
Because there was, in 2012, there was a CW TV show called Beauty and the Beast where they made it into, like, a procedural crime show, kind of, where they were solving crimes. But the Beast in that movie, I think he just had one single scar over one eye, which, like, if anything, accentuates his cheekbones and makes him look better. So, like, completely missing the point of that.
Wasn't there a Ron Perlman Hamilton.
Yeah. Back in the late 80s, and they made him like put on fucking lion makeup. Like they made him look like, oh yeah, Ron, you cover your entire face, you monster. But this guy, we're just going to give him a small scar in his chin.
And like the movie harps so much on like this, like his flaw beforehand truly is that he's like too beauty obsessed. He's not just a jerk. It's like specifically beauty obsessed.
Yeah, yeah.
But like they don't make him that ugly.
Yeah.
And like if you're going to make him ugly, you think you would make him like, you know, overweight or like lose his hair or something. Like
attack his bone structure.
Attack the things that he is saying are bad for him to realize, hey.
Chris was like, he gets to keep his six pack.
Yes.
yeah, he's like, he's still cut. He's still got the cheekbones. He's still got the beautiful eyes and everything. Like, he's still a very handsome man. He just looks like he's had some, like, body mod. Like, he would probably do very well in a BDSM scene in New York City.
Like, yeah. And, like, in fact, so when he's transformed, he, like, goes out on Halloween.
Yeah.
And, like, no one is like, ah! They're just like, yeah, this is normal.
Yeah.
This is just a guy.
You went to the cheap spirit store, didn't you?
Well, that was also confusing.
No, he went to the good one.
That was also confusing to me because on that night he meets our heroine Lindy.
Yeah.
And like she talks to him in the context of Halloween and everything seems fine. She doesn't think anything's amiss. But then we later have a moment where he reveals to her his face and he acts like it's a new situation. Like she's never seen his face before, but she has. And in that moment she's not like, oh yeah, I saw you on Halloween.
Also, he is not unrecognizable as Kyle.
And so this might be, like, I might have missed a shot or two when I was watching that section, but to me it seemed like all of the shots were angled so that she couldn't see most of his face. She was just talking to this random person that she saw.
Yeah,
he's wearing a hoodie a lot. Hoodie has a very wide, like a Jedi Sith.
Or like
thing.
Like an Assassin's Creed hoodie.
Yeah, it's not like covering any of his face. It's just, but it, we're supposed to believe it is. It's just that you can only see him face on, I guess. Yeah.
Neil Patrick Harris says, you gotta have style.
Yeah.
He does say that. So the other important element I want to talk about this cast is Vanessa Hudgens, who was having a big moment around 2011. They were kind of testing her out as a standalone movie star. She was really, really huge off of the High School Musical movies. So huge, in fact, that so at this time she was dating Zac Efron, who was her co-star from those movies, and this movie got pushed back a full year because it was originally slated to come out the same weekend as one of his movies, which was called Charlie St. Cloud.
Oh.
And they didn't want the drama of like
the not Hudgens being able to
Efron
go to
movies going head to head, especially when they were both looking like they were going to tank.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, I mean, they made the right choice by not. I think I haven't seen Charlie St. Cloud. Well, I imagine it's better than
the original Barbenheimer.
Before we get too far down, this movie did not tank.
It did not. No, it made money. It was really cheap. It cost $17 million and it made $43 million.
But does that really make money if you factor in
It still makes
advertising
money
and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, usually the rule is you double the budget for the marketing. So it would still eke out a small little...
Yeah.
It didn't lose money.
It didn't lose money.
Yeah.
But
it probably wasn't super profitable.
It was eviscerated
but
by
for
critics.
How bad
it was largely
that's
ignored.
Impressive.
Yeah, it was absolutely torn apart, and like that was two strikes and you're out for Alex Pettifer. Combine that with, as we talked about, he has a reputation for being a huge piece of shit. He was really abusive and paranoid, and he had some domestic violence charges pressed against him by Diana Agron, who they were dating off of I Am Number 4.
Did we talk about this already? Because I definitely
we
don't
mentioned
remember.
It. Yeah, it sounds. I don't know if he's gotten better. I know he got kicked out of the Magic Mike movies because he and Channing Tatum hate each other.
Oh,
which from what I've heard of the story, it sounds like Channing is in the right on that one. But you know, you never say never to a pretty man in Hollywood. Alex Pettifer has a movie coming out this weekend as we're speaking.
What? What movie?
He is in the new Guy Ritchie movie called The Ministry of Distinguished Gentlemen or something.
Oh,
yeah.
I
know someone who's seeing that tonight.
Yeah, it's like a Henry Cavill.
I really love Henry Cavill.
You know
who
what?
Doesn't?
Here's the thing.
What a man.
I hate Guy Ritchie
what
movies.
Okay, I'm a big fan. So I read all the Witcher books. There are like 11. Well, 11? I don't know. It's complicated.
There's a lot.
And when I saw him be the Witcher, I was like, yes, thank you. And the first season was so good. And then, like, they just stopped using the source material. And, like, he was frustrated. And, all the fans were frustrated. Because these books are best-selling. They're very – and they're not just, like – dull books. These books are very good.
And The Witcher 3 is one of the best-selling video games of all time. I put in probably like 150 hours on
The Witcher.
I got bored of that show in like two episodes.
But the Witcher video game has the same sort of feel of the novels, which is like morality is complicated.
Yeah.
And there are no easy answers.
Also, Geralt horny. In the games, yeah. Like, Geralt real horny. They have sex on a unicorn.
No, Geralt isn't so horny in the books. He's a little horny, but okay. he's not.
Is he horny in the show? I tuned out pretty quickly.
I don't.
I feel like they're missing
a
that
little
key
bit.
Structure
but,
to him.
I don't know.
But also weirdly, Henry Cavill, kind of asexual on screen. Am I? Is that
no?
Wrong?
You're not
is that
wrong.
For like a
no,
such a,
yeah.
He's got that Tom Cruise thing where like they're physically perfect men that don't seem to have any kind of chemistry with anybody.
So I think that's so fascinating because like visually stunning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Beautiful. Beautiful man. But you're right. I don't think I've seen a single pairing with him and a lady actress. I felt like he had more chemistry with Yasker.
I feel like the man from Uncle had some.
See, I still haven't
I'm
seen
learning
that.
Something about myself because I've always kind of been like meh on like I've always thought he's cool, but I'm like, oh, I just don't feel it. And I'm like, oh, was it just because I don't feel chemistry with him? Is that I like to think that I like people despite whether they're showing chemistry with people, but maybe
no,
if I
but
can't imagine loving them,
it's
I'm
a
just
thing.
Out.
It's a thing.
Just
you
out.
You can be a captivating like film actor and like have a lot of chemistry and be like watchable on your own, and then just have no connection with any actors they pair you with.
So,
it's a weird phenomenon. Maybe
one of my favorite
in the bubble.
Podcasts is talking about this movie that I love, The Thomas Crown Affair.
You listen to Blank Check?
Yeah, I'm listening to Blank Check. And I'm just like, Rene Russo and Pierce Brosnan, they burn up the screen.
Dude, that is a sexy movie.
Burn up the screen. And then like you get a movie like Beastly, and it's just like, they don't have chemistry.
God. It looked
they don't
like
have a ton of chemistry.
No.
There's so many weird things about this movie. It takes place over a year.
Yeah.
But like, and yet, so you'd think if it took place over a year, it could just be like the highlights of that year, so much thing. We still see so much downtime in this movie.
Well, because when you think about it, his entire life is downtime during that year, I guess.
Well, and if you think about Beauty and the Beast, they have that beautiful song where they like, when
there's
they get
no
to
be our guest number.
Yeah.
Well, no, not the Beast. I'm not talking about the Be Our Guest number.
That is missing from this movie, though.
It's not a musical.
They had Neil Patrick Harris right there. I'm just saying.
I think, honestly, it would have been better as a musical.
Yeah.
It is. It and would, like, yeah. And even the live action film like made ridiculous. It's like in the top 20 of all like
all time
films of all time,
money
wise.
Made so much money.
But this they have the montage of Beauty and the Beast and Disney of them falling in love and like doing different activities together. Instead, in this movie, they're reading a poem to each other as the weather changes outside.
Yeah.
It's so fucking stupid.
Well, the whole, like, so dumb. So what happens? He becomes beastly. He gets cursed. He's his rich news anchor dad, which is a whole other thing, who's also a jerk, sends him to their other shittier apartment that still was probably like a multi-million dollar apartment in New York City. How a local news anchor is affording this, don't worry about it. But then, so he's there, and he's there for a long time before he gets Lindy there. And the circumstances under which he gets Lindy there are so...
Okay, we need to... All right.
Okay, we gotta get into this.
We gotta get some plot real quick.
I have 7.5 hours that I need to talk about that trade here. Okay, because here's the thing about Beauty and the Beast. It's a problematic story on its face.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of red flags in that story that we've all come to kind of recognize and acknowledge now. Beastly somehow stitched like 7 or 8 more red flags onto the red flag to make it like one of the big red flags you would fly over a car dealership.
We start with the stalker sequence.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
He just starts like casually stalking Lindy because he's bored and like, whatever. There doesn't seem to be like major harm there. Like he's stalking her in public areas, which is not. I'm not defending that, but like he's not doing anything where I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
You're doing things where like.
It's like he's not in school. He would be doing this in school if whatever. But then, so he just happens to run across her one night. We find out that her dad's a drug dealer.
Yeah.
Or on drugs, one of the two.
He's like an addict. Yeah.
Yeah. So some guy is threatening both of them, like, hey, I need my money, and he's like, I'll get it soon.
Yeah.
Also, side note, a major plot of this movie is that she's saving up money for this Machu Picchu trip.
Yes.
Which has to cost several thousand dollars. And yet she's not going to use that money to save her dad from this drug dealer.
Nah, fuck it.
She's like, no, I'm going to Machu Picchu. I've been saving all year.
Dad, I've had dad for long enough.
Never addresses that. Whatever. So in this confrontation that Hunter, Kyle goes by Hunter in his
form. Yeah,
specifically because he doesn't want to go by Kyle or else she'll realize who he actually is.
Excuse me, Kyle Kingston, not Kingston. Kingston.
Based on the quality of that game, I think that was just them doing their best.
It was
they were doing their best.
Well, we're not talking about the game yet.
That's a whole other can.
So something happens with it. So there's a drug dealer, Lindy, and her dad, and Hunter is watching. There's two drug dealers and they're brothers.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The dad somehow shoots one of them and kills him. And Lindy is knocked out and Hunter runs in, grabs her, brings her to safety.
Puts a book underneath her head as a pillow.
Yes.
Hell yeah. It is slightly more comfortable than a steel floor.
All of this is shot super weird. It's like through the cracks of a fence with like lots of overlapping like half faded shots so you can barely see what's going on. He comes back somehow. The alive drug dealer and her dad are still just like chilling, standing off, and he decides, he's like, oh, I'm gonna kill your daughter for my brother, but not right now. I'm just gonna tell you that I'm gonna do that and run away.
And listeners, just to make clear, what Whitney just summarized was not like the vibe of the movie. It was what he said. He said those words out loud. I will be back for your daughter one day.
Yeah, and he says like, your daughter for my brother, because I couldn't, you know, killing you would not make sense. Because we have to have Lindy in danger.
Right. And I think at
he's
this
got a
point,
code of honor, this random
doesn't dog. The dad still have the gun?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So, but he does not choose to shoot this guy. He has some ethics.
Well, and then Beastly is like, picture. Ah!
Yes. So Hunter's like, this is my opportunity, apparently. Well, Lindy is an actual danger. So I feel like he could do this without the blackmail, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
He takes a and it's two separate pictures. It's the dad and the dead guy, but they are not in a one shot together. I don't think this would be great evidence in court.
Can I just point out right before, I think is it before this or after this, where the dad's like, what do you want? And he's just like, your daughter. And I'm just like, dude.
Yeah, so he takes he takes the picture to
was
blackmail
that
him.
Okay.
That's, I think, at the same time. Maybe I'm confusing the events, but he takes the picture and he's like, she has to come to stay with me. But it's like done as blackmail, where I feel like that would have been perfectly reasonable to be like, hey, your daughter's in trouble. I'm rich and have a safe apartment. Have her. Like, I feel like he could have convinced her to come with her.
He could have couched this in a way that wasn't as creepy, especially because this was pretty far into the movie before this actually happens. So,
this main plot that happens in like the Disney Beauty and the Beast, probably like 15 minutes into the movie.
Yeah,
like
you're
45 minutes into this movie.
Yeah, we have to spend a lot of time with him being shitty because he's very pretty and we need him on film a lot. Yeah. And then we need like a long, long chunk of him puttering around his apartment
with
like,
Neil Patrick Harris.
Yes, with Neil Patrick Harris.
I'm bookmarking.
We'll come back.
Because this whole subplot of how he gets her to the house, it's always problematic in every Beauty and the Beast story. This is the most actively problematic.
Can I point out that he's blackmailing the dad, saying, I will send these to the police if you don't let me take your daughter to live with me.
Yes.
And the dad is still there with a gun. I would have been like, no, give me the fucking phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, also, the man just killed a man.
He's got his own thing going on. That dude is high on adrenaline right now he's not high on anything
Hunter
else.
He doesn't really know the real world. You know, he's living in his pretty little castle. And he's just like,
but
this
that's
is fine.
When you get pistol whipped.
So like, all this happens. It's a bad setup to begin with. That it's basically like blackmail to get Lindy to his house.
Yeah.
But then like, her reaction to it is so strange. Like, no, I don't want to go. Like, she's upset about it, but not in the way she should be. She's not like, fuck, Dad, why are you letting me, this random guy take me?
It's like if you're being sent to stay with your grandparents for the weekend.
Oh, I happen to, and like,
exactly, it's that kind of energy,
She also just, like, doesn't, I don't think she knows it's this guy that she talked to at the Halloween party for a while. Yeah. She just thinks it's some random guy, but is, like, surprisingly okay with it. She's just, like, dramatic teenager about it. Like,
oh, God.
I think she literally says, like, ugh, I know it's life or death, but I don't want to have to miss school.
What they don't cover is that apparently, in that interaction where dad has a gun,
What the fuck's he going by? Hunter. Is blackmailing him. They like negotiate terms of like, yeah, she can go home and get her stuff. Meet at my place tomorrow at noon.
Yeah.
Like, cause she goes there, walks there of her own volition.
Yeah.
Like.
Pretty,
yeah, I mean, well, it's like, does she know that her father murdered someone?
Oh, no, yeah, because she was knocked out for that during
but
it.
Like,
I think
it's still a situation of like, it's not like Hunter takes her home with him.
Yeah.
She eventually,
Hunter lets her go home with her dad, and then they work the details out.
Well, because the guy wasn't that urgent. He's just like, someday I'm going to kill her.
That's the situation. Not tomorrow.
One of these days, I'll get around to it.
Yeah. So it's just so weird that they like make this weird middle ground where it's not like, I think it would have been totally fine if they just been like, hey, you're in danger. This makes the most sense. Like, it would have been a stretch, but this weird thing where it's like both blackmail and for her safety. And
they should have picked one or the other. Cause it could just completely work if he's just being all like, oh, I'm blackmailing you into getting your daughter here. But like they added the extra layer of danger with the brother of the drug dealer,
which kind of doesn't pay off except in the alternate ending of the movie, which we'll get to later.
We'll get to that. I mean, also, here's the thing about Beauty and the Beast stories. Like, it's a delicate balance to get us on the Beast's side, right? Like, it's a hard thing to do. Like, a few movies have done it. Like, we talked about I don't know why we brought up the Renoir, like, La Belle Bête. Like, the incredible, like, French version from the 40s, or the Disney one from 1991. Like, those are ones where they thread that needle pretty well. This character is already starting from a deficit, all right? Because he's already such an aggressively cartoonishly horrible.
I don't even think it's
and then
cartoonishly, because it's so far.
And then we're
what
also
do you say cartoonish means?
No, yeah,
I mean,
but like, that's what cartoonish means.
But it feels like he found another level over cartoonishly. That is like
he's in anime like, territory.
It's like it's like parody almost.
It is. Yeah. It's almost self parody. Yeah, but I mean, so he's already starting from that deficit. Then we're saddling this character with I don't like picking on actors, but a really fucking bad actor who is not selling these lines with any kind of conviction. And so
the writing is so bad.
This has to be one of the worst screenplays we've encountered on the show. And we watched Toys with Robin Williams. Like, this is a horrible screenplay. So like, everybody is doing what they can. Vanessa Hudgens is saddled with the most awkward expository dialogue. Every line out of her mouth has to be like,
she's like,
oh, hello, I'm 4'9" and I live in the
scholarship
and
kid.
While she's delivering all of these lines, I think it's the most I've ever seen somebody very clearly telegraph that they're into somebody else.
Yeah.
Because that whole time it was like, this girl might follow you home in a creepy way.
That's the other thing. It's very interesting that like they chose to in the before the Beast situation, like she's definitely into Kyle. Like even though he's a jerk, she's into you think it would be better plot if she's like, oh no, I'm not like other girls. I'm not into this popular guy because he's mean.
That's what they should have done. Like, I don't know why
give us a Gaston.
No, it doesn't. There's no reason for her to like him at all. Because like she's like what is the, you know,
like she even says, oh, you haven't talked to me for 3 years and we're just meeting now, because I guess she's running for treasurer of the situation.
And
I think in that same thing he like accuses her of trying to be president or something. It's
bizarre. It makes no sense. But these two have negative chemistry. Like, there's a kiss at the end of the movie that feels like it is. There's a gun off screen, like trained at them if they don't do it. Like,
well, it's so interesting to see the difference in Alexander Pettifer and Vanessa Hutchinson's like take on the material, because like it's the same script, but Vanessa Hudgens manages to be adorable a lot of the time.
My favorite adorable moment is she's walking down he's stalking her. She's walking down the street and then she starts singing out loud, and not just like a little bit, but like fully like singing. And then she catches herself and laughs and like
oh,
like, yeah,
I'm being so silly. I'm such a manic pixie dream girl. Oh my God. Yeah. I've never gotten on board with Vanessa Hudgens as an actress. I think the one thing I ever saw her in that really kind of impressed me was the NBC Live.
Yes, Grease. That's what I was just going to say. Yeah, she did an amazing performance of the day her dad died.
Yeah, she did Rizzo the day her dad died, and she was like really incredible. I'm not going to pin it on her here because this script is so bad. We even have a lot of like old hands. We have like veteran actors in here. Like we said, we have Peter Krause from 6 Feet Under. We have Lisa Gay Hamilton, and we have Neil Patrick Harris, who I want to unpin this one. I love Neil Patrick Harris. I like Neil Patrick Harris. He's riding high, obviously, around
he's
this time.
He's our Lumiere of this movie. He comes into Tudor Hunter and is blind. That's like his... I guess this movie tried to bring in the element where like the other members of the household are cursed. So it's like, he's blind, which is wildly offensive to blind people, how badly he talks about being blind. Just calls it living hell. And then his...
Also, he never stops mentioning...
Do all these hobbies that...
Oh, he plays darts flawlessly.
And golf.
Yeah.
It absolutely, as I was watching this movie, I was like, he's just Daredevil.
He's Daredevil. Yeah. He's wearing the red glasses.
Yeah.
He's just doing Daredevil. And look...
And I was like, honestly... He could do Daredevil.
I think Neil Patrick Harris can be very good when you give him the right project and you kind of...
I liked him in this.
I think he's terrible in this. I think he's embarrassing.
I like him in this because like...
He's a lovable character.
I thought he's lovable. Yeah. He's the only character... Well, he's...
I think he does good.
He's likable.
Yeah, the material is bad. But
to be clear, everybody is terrible in this movie. Yes. Like, and everybody in this movie is talented in some way. I think he's pretty embarrassing. Maybe it's more embarrassing because he's... trying harder than everyone else. He's trying to... I'm gonna give him credit for trying to put like a little extra mustard on his line readings, because like he's trying to make something out of nothing. He's a Broadway guy, he's gonna go for it, but because no one else is matching his level, he just looks like a clown.
There is one moment in the movie so after Lindy has moved in, like, even after Lindy moves in, it takes forever for Hunter and Lindy to actually like start spending time together for no clear reason.
He tries to buy her like Gucci handbags.
He leaves her things at the door and runs away and watches cartoonishly. It's amazing. But like when they do finally start getting together, he's like, oh, well, I'll do school together because I have this tutor.
Yeah.
And like in the moment in which Neil Patrick Harris, I don't even remember his name. Neil Patrick, does he have a name?
I think Will. Yeah, Will? I think that's right. Yeah.
The moment when Lindy and Will meet, like that is maybe the most chemistry there is in the movie.
100%.
Yeah. He's like, oh, are you like a Rangers fan? Like, ooh, okay. And then it gets a little weird, but there's like a brief moment where I'm like, ooh, this is the chemistry we're craving.
I was like, yeah, this was missing. We got two hockey fans. Can we watch this movie now instead of the other one?
Yeah.
I'm down.
I'm in it for it for the version of Beauty and the Beast where Beauty just falls in love with Lumiere instead.
Exactly. I mean,
is it more of a
in the last Disney one, it was Ewan McGregor who we've had whole sidebars on. So yeah. No, I don't want to ding him too bad, but I think it is also the embarrassing element of being stuck with being forced to play a disabled character and playing it with all the nuance that a movie like Beastly would allow you to have. Like, there's no nuance. He's doing so much business with his hands all the time.
He's forced to say "was up" like 10 years after that was a thing.
Yeah.
Like,
oh God, that montage. Also, I am
100%. And they got a montage, but the romance didn't get a montage.
It's the real bromance.
It's the only chemistry coming from the movie. Yeah. Also, this is a CBS Films production, which they did not have many of those. But as a result, I'm 100% certain that the rooftop set in this movie is the same roof of How I Met Your Mother.
Oh.
I am dead certain it's the same thing.
Oh, and is that why Neil Patrick Harris is even in it?
I bet that is.
Yeah,
he was a big CBS star at the time. Yeah, I'm guaranteed this is the same set. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Same with the shooting scene looked like their fire escape.
Yes, it did a lot.
I'm 100% certain on this. I will wager money.
Yeah.
Somebody from the production of this film, don't hold me to that.
Also, this is something I got from another podcast on this subject.
Yeah.
But apparently he was wearing blind contacts.
Yeah.
He couldn't see, which is astounding on many levels, because he seems like he can see a lot of the time.
He really seems like he can see. And also, jumping ahead to the end of the movie, he gets his blindness cured at the end of the film.
The witch cures it.
Which, again, is hugely disrespectful to blind people, because they're treating it like, like it's something that needs to be cured. Like, you're not a whole person unless this happens, which is creepy and bullshit, especially when it's been so pandering the whole movie.
He does become blind in the movie, which I feel like makes it like 5% better.
He wasn't like he was born blind. Okay. Yeah.
Because I'm sure that's a big adjustment. But yeah, it's again, he calls it like a living hell and just acts like being blind. Even though he's doing great. He can play darts.
He's doing fine. He dresses very well.
He got
he's...
hired by a rich man to tutor a guy and not really do any work.
He just sits around like fucking around all day.
Watches hockey.
Watches hockey.
He listens to hockey.
He hangs out with the nice Jamaican maid. Like, yeah, they've got it all set up, you know? So because, how did this movie end?
Because fucking Hunter, whatever his name is, refuses to do any learning.
Yeah. No, he doesn't learn or grow.
He doesn't learn or grow at all.
No, we really never.
And like, we don't even really see like the lesson the witch supposedly wants him to learn. Oh yeah, by the way, side note, he has a very cool tattoo. Like, instead of the rose, he has like a tattoo of a tree.
Yeah.
That, like, blooms of the tree also like changes for other seasons. I think it has like Christmas lights around Christmas and stuff.
So
like,
dumb.
I loved it. I would love a changing tree tattoo. But he like, so like the lesson she wants him to learn is like, you know, to not be so looks obsessed, but like, he doesn't really spend any meaningful time doing that. It'd be one thing if he like went out in the world and realize like, oh hey, there are people who see me for me even though I'm ugly right now. Even though he's not that ugly, or like spending time with other people who aren't hot and being like, wow, they have value. Like, none of that happens.
Yeah,
like, he falls in love with a hot girl. Like that's his big.
And again, he could show up looking exactly the way he does for most of this movie, with the bald head and the kind of silvery patterns on his nose, and he would book a major Gucci campaign like for years, because he's still jacked and he still looks like very photogenic. Like, and he looks interesting.
Got those
now.
Cheekbones.
You know, like, there's like really no serious consequences except this guy's own self-image, and we never really feel that conveyed. Because
I would have, well, alternate version of this movie, he would like get into the goth scene and find some girl that he would have made fun of before, who maybe looks like the witch, and then like falls in love with her,
or fall in love, just fall in love with Mary-Kate Olsen, just fall in love with the witch,
make
her more of a character.
Well, and he definitely
also, how old was she
in
around this time?
In the regular Beauty and the Beast, the whole point is that they do let them go, and he never, like, he's like, but I'll let you go to Machu Picchu, but then she chooses not to go, which is so fucked up.
So to get towards the end of the movie, he's like, things are getting close. They're definitely like, they have chemistry. Stuff is happening. They're like reading poetry to each other. There's a little montage, and he like discusses like the, you know, his housekeeper, who's like the Mrs. Potts character, who her flaw is that she needs green cards for her children.
Yes.
And Neil Patrick Harris are like, oh, you know, you got to woo her. Can you take her to some like fancy house? And he's like, I don't have a fancy house. And they're like, well, I do have the lake house.
Like, what is the point of that dialogue then? Like, are we sitting here pretending that they don't have a fancy house, or like that?
And it's like, it's called the Lake Cottage, and it's just like definitely like a huge Hamptons-esque house.
Oh yeah.
So they go there, and on their way there, Lindy gets a text that's like, hey, the brother's in jail. You can come home. You're safe.
Yeah.
Although if she's there for bribery reasons, that still doesn't fully check out, but whatever. This movie doesn't know what it's doing
again,
with that.
Again, that subplot. I mentioned The Room earlier, but have you all seen The Room?
Of course.
So this really reminds me of the Chris R. subplot, you know, the random thug who comes in for one scene, threatens Danny 100%. About a drug deal, and disappears from the movie. That's what this guy
is. I do wonder if, like, the whole blackmail element, like, if they did just do what we were suggesting and have it just be, like, a danger issue, but then some people were like, oh, I don't know, I don't buy it, and they're like, oh, let's throw in a blackmail line on top of it to really sell it or something.
Ugh.
So she gets this text and she deletes it, which isn't, you still got to respond to your dad, Lindy.
Yeah, come on.
But she deletes it and chooses to stay with Hunter even though she doesn't have to. So that's like our sign that she's like actually in love now.
I'm going to clarify some details real quick just because that's what I've been looking into.
Oh, sure.
So
you were reading the Wikipedia plot summary?
I was reading nothing about the plot summary. However, I was reading,
Justin famously knows that's my thing. When we watch movies, I am 100%. Constantly reading the Wikipedia plot summary whilst watching the movie to make sure I know what's happening.
I'm usually just reciting it from cold memory. So
beastly.
People love watching movies with me.
Let's watch movies together.
They filmed all of the rooftop scenes in Beastly at a soundstage in Montreal.
Okay.
And How I Met Your Mother was filmed in sound stages in Los Angeles.
In LA. Okay. All right.
So
all right.
They were different places.
How I Met Your Mother, that took place in New York City, filmed in Los Angeles?
Oh, yeah. It's a very LA
show. Most productions that are in New York are not in New York.
Yeah, that's wild to me because how Friends much your mother, is in LA, yeah. How much your mother, like, New York City is, like, very much a character in that show more than, like, a lot of shows that just, like, happen to be in New York. So that's wild.
It's really, like, Seinfeld was, like, the only show that actually filmed in New York, I think.
Friends did, too, didn't
No, Friends was Friends LA. Did? Friends was a soundstage in LA. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and a lot of those things are not there. All right, have we said all we have to say about this movie? No, we have the alternate ending to talk about here.
The alternate ending and just the ending I want to talk about.
Yeah, there's the regular ending, which I kind of like forgot.
And I want to clarify, like, just because I did see this note as well, so I looked it up. Seinfeld was largely filmed in LA as well.
Oh, excuse me. Okay.
Because it's the same sound stages.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I thought there was some of it. I know the diner, I don't know if it's the same
sound stages, but it was CBS sound stages.
The exterior shots at the very least are real places. Yeah, like the diner.
Yeah, they'll often do that to get B-roll. They'll send crews around and then do all the actual filming elsewhere. All right, that's where they'll get, like, the rooftop
moving
stuff too. But yes, moving
on.
remind me how the movie ended, so, like the theatrical cut.
But going back to what I said, we're in, again, there's no sacrifice because she was going to go to Machu Picchu and she's like, JK, I spent all this money and I worked my ass off all year, but I'm young and I'm in love, so I'm going to abandon all my dreams. Because you can't wait a week. She has no sense of urgency. No. So, like, why would she? The idea that this girl, this young woman, would cancel all her plans for this D-bag is just infuriating
to me. I think the Machu Picchu trip is meant to be a time thing because I think that just happens to be when the curse timeline is up. So it's, like, very arbitrary that this is even a problem in the first place.
Yeah.
But yeah, the ending. So they first at the lake house, he like gives her a letter of how he feels. But then she gets.
I love the letter because it's not one letter; it's multiple pages.
He wasn't sending to her throughout. It's like sending them all at once, like a total creeper.
It's like a tome wrapped in a ribbon.
It's thick. And so he gives it to her.
It's thick with many scenes.
Like, I think they're literally like on top of each other, like about to make out after he's given her this letter. But then she gets a text from her dad that he's in the hospital. Because he OD'd.
Mood killer. Yeah.
And I totally thought this was the plan to escape.
Oh,
so she gets out, runs away, has to go back. And then, but when she's about to get on the train, she's like, Hunter, you're a great friend. And he's like, no, I just gave her a letter confessing all my feelings.
He'd never been friended before by a woman.
And yeah, he just like totally assumes that she's not going to be into it. So then she calls him a bunch after she's read these letters, presumably, and he just won't listen to the messages. He just is, she's, or maybe they're just like, hey, call me back, and they don't say, like, I love you.
He's planning to ghost her now.
Yeah, he is planning to ghost her. That's, he essentially does ghost her.
Yeah.
If you like Neil Patrick Harris and them are like, fucking call her. Will's like, she even called me trying to get a hold of you.
Yeah.
Fucking call her back.
Yeah, just like jumps way too hard in the fact that like, hey, you haven't confessed your feelings yet. So it's not crazy that she just called you a good friend for like seeing her off on the train.
Like this has a point, I promise. I think I've probably told this story on the show in the past, but when they were casting the movie The Graduate, Mike Nichols was talking to Robert Redford to play the part. And he was like, okay, so I want you to channel what it feels like to be rejected by a girl. And Robert Redford gave him a blank stare because, like, he was speaking another language because he had no idea what that concept was. I feel like that's what this character is going through. Like, he's freaking out because he's like, oh, something bad happened to me. I have no idea how to process this.
He has no concept that you could actually be friends as a layer of, like, romance. Like, I only date people that, like, I also feel friendship for.
Right. Yeah. It's like such a foreign concept. I love dropping that Redford story any chance. He's just so pretty. He just had no idea. Yeah.
So he thinks he's been friend zoned. He refuses to answer her calls. She's attended to her dad. So then he like, but then I guess he's, the ending is so unmemorable that it doesn't super stick hard, but I think he runs to the school.
Yeah.
Because apparently they're meeting at the school before going to Machu Picchu and not at the airport.
Yeah.
I guess maybe in New York City that may or may not make sense. I guess. I don't know. He runs there and like looks for her, but like, oh, it seems like it's too late. I think he also maybe reveals his face to people at school.
Yeah. And everybody's just kind of like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. By the way, when
Kyle's got a new look,
when
I guess.
When he reveals his face to Lindy for the first time, too, her response is, I've seen worse.
What a saint. Like,
ooh, yeah. But yeah, back to the end. So then eventually they find each other, and then, I don't know, he gets the I love you, I guess.
And then he turns back into a pretty boy, and she's confused about why he's there, and she has to convince her.
What happens is she says, I love you. He assumes the time is over because he's watched the thing on his wrist happen.
Yeah.
So he's like, you know what? Whatever. It's fine. We've had this thing. And then he goes, go on. Like, go on the fucking trip. And yeah. she's like, no. And he's like, go on the trip.
Yeah.
For crying out loud.
Especially in high school, it's so wild to me that that was a big thing for her. Like, I can't see the wonder of the world without you. Like, I went on, like, school trips without my, like, crushes or boyfriends, and I never once thought for a second, like, oh, no, I don't want to go on this trip because of my boyfriend won't be there.
Give him a week to stew. I don't know. Yeah. They'll be
and
fine.
And then, like, she...
And they have cell phones. They can text.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She finally is like, okay. And then he leaves, and, like, after he leaves is when the curse lifts, and he's like, oh, shit, okay.
Yeah. Oh, so and then she has to go find him again.
She runs out because she's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm really not going.
Yeah.
Because we had this back and forth, and we're doing it again. And then she's, like, running around trying to find Hunter. And then she sees Kyle and's like, Kyle,
like, I don't
what are you doing?
Yeah, you've been gone for a year, but I got to find Hunter.
And then just kind of, like, goes to brush him off, and he's like, no, no, no. Listen, this is me. I'm them. I'm Hunter.
Surprise, I've been lying.
The ending is really diluted because it has these, like, two moments. It's, like, the love confession moment and then the, like, hey, I'm actually Hunter or Kyle moment. And
the best,
like,
moment is that she's like, I don't believe you. What the fuck? I'm calling Hunter. And then she calls Hunter, and then his phone starts ringing, and she just stares at him for a few seconds.
I wanted another 5 minutes of, how'd you get Hunter's phone? How'd you get his phone?
What did you do?
This is all undercut by the fact that she liked Hunter before, so this isn't, like, that big of a leap for her.
No.
She's like, oh, she liked Kyle before, so she's like, oh, man, I guess these two guys that I've been interested in the last year are the same guy.
Hey, a bonus, I guess. I don't know. Like,
bonus.
Like, all right, so that's, like, the boring, like, theatrical ending.
Oh, and then they have a kiss
in the street. I also want to put in a pin for the last... We can come back to it after we talk about the alternate ending, but there's a last scene in the movie that we have to come back to discuss.
But the alternate ending, which we just watched online, is closer, I think, to the plot of the book.
Yeah.
In that the drug dealer character comes back. He is part of the plot again.
He runs to catch... to the train thing,
yeah.
and it sees that they've already left.
It's the same up to that point, yeah. And then
he leaves and gets a call from...
And he also finally listens to his voicemails at that point,
yeah,
which I don't think he does in the other one. So then she gets a voicemail from him that's like, hey, basically like, hey, I love you. Like, I read your letters and, like, on board. So then he's like, great. And then he doesn't even call her. She just happens to call him.
Yeah.
But it's a situation where she just has the phone on because she's been taken by the drug dealer guy. And she was able to just impart enough information at the right times to get him.
Yes, and now he has to sprint like 45 minutes across town.
And she's, get like a montage implying time has passed.
She's been taken by the drug dealer guy because they fully fucking forgot. Like, when the thing happens and she's like, oh, my dad is OD'ing.
He was supposed to be in jail. So she does say that on the phone. So, like, because he's supposed to be in jail, that's why she was like, you know, that's the reveal that she actually loves Hunter and wants to stay with him.
Yeah.
But on the phone, she's like, you were supposed to be in jail.
That's right. So they cover that one.
Yeah, so he has to go save the day. Like, this criminal is very patiently waiting with a gun to her head for a long time.
Like, and it's literally, like, he kicks in the door to a building and starts running upstairs and, like, trying to find her. When he finds her, the guy is literally just standing there, holding the gun to her head and doing what?
Yeah, were they, like, just, like, talking for 45 minutes?
There's no plot contrivance. Because, like, the whole thing is, like, he wants to kill her. There was no, like, it was not, like... oh, your dad tortured my brother. I'm going to torture you or something like that. Like, I'm glad that wasn't in a teen movie, but it would have at least, like, made more sense or something.
I would just hope they're, like, talking about, like, oh, you watched the finale of Lost?
No, no.
Like,
you watched the Rags game last night? Yeah. Like, maybe, what's going on?
Yeah. Here's going to be my headcanon, is that he wanted the dad to see it. Maybe he wanted the dad to see it. So he was, waiting for the dad to show up.
But still, like, you know, tied to a chair or something. Yeah, like, that's weird. That's just creepy.
That takes a long time here. I'm going to get tired.
Hunter bursts in. The guy has the gun pointed at Lindsay, but then points it at Hunter. He just decides to charge the guy with a gun, which does work, but he gets shot in the process.
Yeah.
Which is what I would always think first is, I'm going to get shot if I do that.
Oh, yeah. You know, and so it's meant to be this more heroic sacrifice moment, which is more in keeping with the original story, you know. But
so then he's on the ground, she's on top of him, and is like, oh, like, and like, you know, says like, I love you. He's like, oh, let me call 911. He's like, no, it's okay. Yeah. I feel fine.
The elves, they're not on the ground, though. They land on a bed.
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah. But like a ground bed. It's not ground. It's like a pallet on the floor.
They land on my roommate's bed, which is just a mattress with sheets and blankets on a floor.
Yes.
It feels like, you know, when you're kids and you're like playing, you're like roughhousing and you need to do like stunt falls and stuff.
Yeah.
And you're
just falling. Well, I think it's implied to be the drug dealer's apartment, which is a bad idea to commit a murder in your apartment, but whatever.
Yeah.
Look,
he's fueled by vengeance.
For sure. So, and then they like have this like heart to heart. She has a tear comes out of her eyes that I think Hunter puts on his finger and it like turns into a crystal. But that isn't like what heals his gun wounds. Like you think that would, but does that break the curse? I don't know what the
I love you breaks the curse.
Yeah, I love you breaks the curse.
We hit a point of where that's like, they had some ideas, they threw them all in and we're like, whatever.
All the board. So then like when he gets the I love you, the flowers on his tattoo float off of the tattoo and into his bullet wound.
Yeah.
Apparently they have healing properties as well, just in case the witch always knew this was going to end maybe in a gunfight.
See, this is why we need to go back to natural medicine, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Drop Polices. Some white flower petals so in your bullet wound. So you'll be fine.
And like they also like blur the moment too. There's not like, they're not busting the budget on CGI here, but like the bullet hole
they
goes
spent
away.
All of it on the prosthetics for his face.
Yeah, the bullet hole goes away and he turns back into Alex Pettyfer.
It was all animated by Strong Bad. Yeah.
With lots more like gray camera work. The cinematography in this movie is interesting.
Yeah.
And
so
then,
yeah, she's on top of him now, and then he's like back to normal, and she's doing this very unconvincing what acting. Like, she's just like trying to, she's trying to convey like the shock of this moment and completely failing.
Another moment I wanted to talk about when they first burst into the apartment and he sees the gun dealer with like the gun to Lindy. We zoom in on her mouth. Like there's just a shot of her like red lipsticked mouth like smiling to imply that like, oh, this is my love.
But then we get like super mega happy ending where they get to go to prom together.
Yeah,
and
which
everybody's buds. Like Dakota Johnson, we haven't even mentioned her. She was his girlfriend at the beginning, very young Dakota Johnson. She shows up, they're cool. He's cool with the witch now. Like he gives her compliments.
Have a cute little moment.
And like Neil Patrick Harris's blindness is cured, immigration is cured.
I just pulled up the alternate ending just so that I can verify. While they're having this cute moment in the bed, The guy's just unconscious on the floor.
Oh, yeah. For
sure.
No, with the gun still.
They don't have to worry about him.
That's
with
not going
to the witch still. Will probably take care of him, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, they go to prom, and then he sees, you know, he's like, we see him cool with everyone. He's like dressed a little different. And then he like makes a point to say to, like, Lindy walks up in her beautiful prom dress, and he's like, hey, you're beautiful. On the inside.
With all the wit of a wet paper bag. Just
yeah. So we need to talk about a character that we haven't talked about enough.
Yeah.
And the character that has their own little cameo in the ending, and that's the witch.
Yeah, yeah.
If you were an infinitely powerful witch, would you go to high school?
Yeah. No,
especially when, okay, I checked her age. Mary-Kate Olsen was 25 at the time of this movie, which is not like unreasonable for an actor playing at high schooler. Like that
Look,
happens.
We watched
but, like,
Grease.
Like Vanessa Hudgens was probably also in her 20s.
Yeah, she was early 20s at this point, and Alex Pettyfer was 20, like on the dot. But like, she looks older. She looks more worldly. She looks more experienced.
Well, she has a flawless smoky eye that like high schoolers are not capable of at
Look,
any given moment.
Their makeup looks good. She's got some big kind of Amy Winehouse hair going on. They shoot her in such unflattering light, like anytime she's on screen. Like they're doing her such a disservice and like shooting her so poorly.
I thought
so
she was
poorly.
Hot the whole time.
I thought she's hot the whole time too. I think they just gave her witchy lighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
and sometimes
it looks
her eyebrows
more,
are bleached.
It looks more fluorescent lighting than anything.
Yeah.
It just looks kind of unfly. But like,
how many times a day do you think she
and like
redyes
she,
her eyebrows?
Yeah,
I only have to assume that she for to be in a high school that she is actually high school aged and she's not like some immortal witch. But like,
but it does need to be mentioned that this
I mean, the
school,
Collins went to high school.
This high school has a witch. that just goes to it, and everyone knows she's a witch, yeah. And they're all like pretty normal about it.
She's a witch, or do they just call her the witch because she like dresses funny?
That's a huge coincidence if they just don't know. Like everybody just refers to her openly as a witch, and she just happens to have witchy powers.
They might not expect her to have actual powers,
right? Yeah. But yeah, so this is Mary-Kate Olsen's very last film performance. You could see why she maybe wanted to hang it up after this. But this was a coup. I remember. Some of the marketing was playing up the fact that she and Neil Patrick Harris were in this movie because it's like these are names, these are people. But she does disappear for much of the movie. She's like the instigator of the plot, but she disappears for much of it. But she does get the final little stinger at the end.
Final stinger.
Yeah. Which does not feel earned with the theatrical ending.
So we zoom in on... So, yeah, we mentioned a little bit that Kyle's dad is like a local but famous news anchor who is also terrible and also has similar things about Image. So, like, just to he's abandoned his son in this movie. We already don't like him.
Right.
Just to bring that point home, we get a final scene of him being like, yeah, the person you're bringing in, make sure she's attractive because otherwise, eh.
I don't want frumpy.
And there's an intern that's coming in, so it's even grosser.
Oh, yeah.
And then we pull to the elevator, and we see these crazy goth high heel shoes that could only be Mary-Kate Olsen's character as the witch, implying that she's now about to curse Kyle's dad.
Seemingly setting up a Beastly 2 starring Peter Krause.
And I have so many questions, because if you're going to branch out from cursing high schoolers, shouldn't you start with this guy's dad? Like, he made him like this.
Yeah.
Like, to take care of the son first.
Go to the grandfather.
Why not?
Start there. It all tracks down. Yeah, ridiculous movie. We need to talk about the game a little bit here, too, because this game is its whole other layer of ridiculous. Bad. Like, if you could imagine what a game based on the movie Beastly would be, you're both right and wrong. It is.
You do not play Kyle or Lindy in this game.
It's exactly what you think it is, and in no way what you think it might be.
Lovely graphics from the Wii, as always.
Yeah, we're going back to the Wii. It's been a little bit since we've gone to the Wii. This was released March 18, 2011. It was developed by Storm City and published by Visual Impact. It is a Wii exclusive, but there is another game called Beastly : Frantic Photo, FOTO. That was on the DS and is generally liked better than this game, but also nobody reviewed either game. So it's hard to say. This is definitely one of those shovelware games that came out when Nintendo got rid of their seal of quality. Like, the floodgates were open for crap like this. Storm City pretty much produces only exclusively really cheap knockoff games. Like, if they've got a puzzle game and something based on the gummy bears, but not the Disney gummy bears, just based on the concept of gummy bears. On the presence of the
candy.
But
they probably couldn't even get the Haribo.
Yeah. No, it's not even Haribo. It doesn't
they
even
have
look.
Standards.
If you look at the cover art, it looks like a hard gummy bear. It looks like an unpleasant gummy bear. I think it's like a kart racer or something. But
game is quite bad.
But this game is not a kart racer.
Called Chevrolet Camaro Wild Ride.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, this game is a mini game collection, like so many different games on the Wii, especially the really lazy ones will always just default to a mini game collection.
I'm a lover of mini game collections, and these don't count as games. These are not games.
They're mini.
I think you came out heavily in defense of the Napoleon Dynamite
game. I did. I like mini games. I think they can be fun. I think Wii's can be, Wii games can be fun.
Yeah.
No, this was 100% something that felt like this was your, college computer game design project.
Yeah.
And you were just like, fuck, we just have to get this done.
And, you failed this project.
And it has to take a certain amount of time to play through. So we're going to...
But
me and Ailish were joking about whether or not it was better or worse than Sims 1 graphics.
I think it might be worse than Sims 1 graphics, despite coming out.
What would we decide? Five, ten years?
10 years 11 later.
11 years before yeah, this. Like a yeah, solid yeah. decade in between.
Yeah, no, this really looks terrible for the Wii. Wii was capable of a lot better than this. Now, the game takes a really bizarre stab at this material. You tell me there's a Beastly game, all right, fine. You tell me there's a mini game collection, all right, fine. I at least assume you're going to play as Beastly or as the Beauty. You're going to be playing as one of those. You're not. Instead, this game takes the same tack applied to the Godfather video game, which is a very different property. Where you're a tertiary character kind of observing and facilitating a lot of the events of the film. So you're not Vanessa Hudgens. You're not Alex Pettifer. You are rando number four who just does chores for people.
Yeah, it's like, so we played probably about a third of this game before, by the mini game count. I think we played about a third of the game.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, no, we get to the furthest... We don't even get to him being cursed, I don't think. Well, or that's where
we're going. It's very sub, yeah.
It happened, and then we got a message in our messages, which is basically just a Facebook social media style feed that was just, hey, I'm going to rehab, losers, or whatever.
Yeah.
So a lot of the game is like you walking around to like points it's telling you, and it shows you an arrow, so it's not particularly challenging. But like, I think the one
walking is challenging.
Okay. That is true.
All right, this is some of the strangest walking controls I've ever seen. So you need to hold the B trigger, point at the screen, and kind of move your character around like you're dragging a mouse. It feels so strange when you have a D-pad right there.
Like, I've played games and used mouse controls like that. Yeah. Like, I've played Diablo using that, stuff like that. And none of them ever felt anywhere near as bad, even if it was a terrible game, as this did.
That is the bizarre thing. I did keep thinking of Diablo when I was playing this.
I feel like it'd be so much better if I was killing games.
I would have strongly preferred Diablo. I want to be clear, but I was thinking of Diablo.
I have a summation of like how busy work and pointless the tasks are.
Yes, please.
And it's your character's trying to go to this party that we mentioned in the movie. You have to like, first you go up to the door and they're like, no, you have to get in line. And then you and then you get in line. There's a little circle for you to wait. And apparently I moved off the circle and it told me to go back to my circle and wait.
Yes, this game has a wait in line simulator. It makes you stand in a green circle while a Chiron above says wait, ... You just have to hold still and not play the game for like 30 seconds.
And then like, if you think like, oh, what if you just had to keep on waiting, moving? That could have been like a fun, like little like maybe motion thing. No, then it tells you to get out of line.
Yeah, you need to get like, out of line.
Then you get out of line, go back to the front and try again.
And then
learn
start...
that you need an invitation. Yes. And then you go get an invitation, but you like maybe also time travel because you go back to school. Where
okay, this was the order. This is the order. You talk to the bouncer. He says you need an invitation. So you go through the line. You walk down the line of people waiting outside the club asking each person if they'll give you an invitation. Obviously, they say no.
Eventually someone
tells find you. Out that someone at the high school has it. Apparently, this club is next to the high school or something. Because
but like also, school should be over. They should all be. The people that you need to get the invite to should be at the party.
That's the thing. You go back to school. It's daytime again. And you have to go talk to the guy who has the invitation who denies that he has the invitation or that you even need one.
Yeah, at first he's like, no, you don't need an invitation. And you keep on like hassling him and he's like, fine, I'll give you an invitation if you do this for me.
Yeah, just go leave something in my girlfriend's locker.
And he tells you to go leave something in Kyle's girlfriend's locker because they eventually get together. But he's like, but don't let Kyle see you.
So you're thinking like stealth minigame,
yeah,
right?
So I walk away thinking like, well, Kyle didn't see me. That wasn't hard. But then Kyle did see me, but then he doesn't care. And I still get the invitation.
To clarify, there was no stealth. Kyle was not there until after the thing was put in.
But
there was no way to prevent it.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
One of the funniest moments to me was there's a mini game where you're at the club, you meet the reporter for the high school paper at the door. He's dancing in the hallway by himself, and he tells you, "I don't feel like doing my job. Go take 5 pictures." You have to walk around taking 5 pictures. They queue it up so that, like, okay, so they've been intermittently showing very brief, poorly cut clips from the movie, like an actual.
The cutting is so bad.
It's like mid-word.
It's
like they had to pay per second of clip or something. So, like, they're not great clips.
They're so poorly edited. Like, like you said, they'll come in mid-word, or like we'll see like half a second of some irrelevant B-roll, and then
we got like a nice shot of the African dancers.
Yeah,
we got a nice shot
of the thighs of those dancers.
A shot where it's literally just everyone's heads.
But this is, either way, this is queuing up that, like, the guy tells you, okay, go take a picture of Lindy and what's his fuck. And so you go over, you find them at their table, you click to take the picture, and it cuts to a
Kyle
clip, right?
Cursed.
And you think, like, we're tying it in. We're going to see who this character that we're playing is in the movie. And maybe it's, like, a cool thing where like, oh, there's an actual person here. And it cuts to somebody of the completely wrong gender, completely different hair, completely different everything.
Taking that picture in the movie.
Really highlighting how little thought was put in this. So, all right.
And then we had to dance.
And then we had to dance. All right. So this is a mini game collection. We played a handful of them. Let's go around and talk about the games that we played. J-Ban, which ones did you do?
Describe
this process.
Okay, I know we should talk about the game, but I don't really want to. It's so bad.
That's fair.
So bad. It's like
you hit bottom on this one. Yeah,
it's just like it. Literally, I think it's the worst game that we've played, and that's saying something.
Yeah,
because like it comes up against Vertigo and E.T.
Well, it was also a little not to like throw you under the bus, but you failed at voting sorting because it wasn't clear.
Intuitive.
So, like, I failed at casting hexes because it wasn't clear.
It was hard.
Yeah.
It like showed pictures.
I didn't fail at dancing.
When you were sorting voting for like apparently this election that was happening, it
yeah.
showed the ballot options were either a blank ballot, so you need to throw that away. There was also the ballots were either had a picture of Kyle's face or a picture of his opponent's face, which like we were talking about, like, I don't know how that would work in school. Is there a pile? Anyway,
yeah,
like, these don't work as ballots.
No.
But then some of them are Kyle defaced, but apparently that is also an invalid ballot.
Right. So in this world, voting is done by drawing a detailed picture of the person you are voting for.
Oh my god.
And if you draw any of the details wrong or try and goof it up a little bit, then your vote does not count.
We got this far and I just remembered the fucking signs at the beginning.
Oh yes. There are okay,
but yeah, it did tie into the plot of the movie where like the witch defaces his posters, and that's like part of what springs off
and,
for cursing him.
But this man had full body encased in glass for a high school environmental committee election.
Well, and like
he seemingly just gets to like he has carte blanche of this school. Like,
and he also acts like the witch defacing them like actually fucked with his election prospects. He's like, she almost cost me the election.
They almost thought I had glasses.
And that's why she like he does something mean to her that causes him to be cursed. But yeah.
I can't be pretty if I have devil horns.
He invites her to the fucking club, and then when she shows up at the club, he's like, you really think you have a chance? And then, like, shit talks her and tries to get her to leave.
And that's great. Again, like, I don't think that's that big a deal. Like, I think he's an asshole, but, like, definitely not enough to be, like, it's not like he, like, betrayed hospitality rules, which is the original Beast like crime. But it's just like he's just a douchebag. And
I think
like
she was gearing up to curse him anyway.
Yeah, no, I think she was. But it was really funny. There's a trope that I really missed from this, and that's the adults fawning over him. I would have loved to have seen a president like a principal of the school been all like, oh my god, you're so attractive.
Yeah, there should be a little bit of that.
We also speculated with the person I watched it with last night that no one, when Kyle gets like, when Kyle disappears from school, that no one is concerned because they're just like, oh, he's rich, he's probably fine. Like, if he had been worse off, maybe someone would have done like a wellness check, but they were like, nah.
Yeah, he's fine. I do want to emphasize how batshit these mini games are. Yeah, like I said, there's some where you just need to point at signs and click them away. There's the voting. There's a DDR thing, like a really lazy one.
Yeah.
There's a weird thing with like locker combinations. So
we
hit a point like where we're just like, all right, we usually get to a point when we play the show, when we are playing games for this show, where we're like, all right, well, the evening's running out. We're not going to play this entire game. Let's look ahead on YouTube to see if there's anything else that we've missed. There's one video playthrough of this game. It's about 43 minutes long. So we're like, oh shit, were we almost done with the game? We queue it up. We watch a little bit. We skip ahead to the end to see if he's playing any different mini games that we are. He gets to the very last mini game that we played before we shut it off. And the last second of audio that we hear before the screen goes black is, yeah, don't buy this fucking game. So the YouTuber gave up at the exact same place that we did.
And we have played some bad games, but there have been walkthroughs of every single game.
Almost everything has.
Now I will share. If you're enjoying Beastly but don't want to watch it, I do really encourage you to go watch Jenny Nicholson's video on it. It's
sure,
great.
Yeah.
So anything I'm about to tell you is stuff I'm getting from Jenny Nicholson's video. A couple fun facts about this video game. They licensed clips but they didn't license the music.
Okay.
So they eventually you do get some like dramatic story beats, but they don't have like the dramatic pop music that makes those moments good. It's like a generic thing in the background. That
yeah. Those moments good.
Very.
They
yeah,
had a Death Cab song.
It dated. Yeah, they had a Death Cab. Yeah.
They had some good music, I thought. They're like, falling in love with you. But they didn't have that in the game.
No.
So it's just like a generic poorly mood match.
Well,
thing.
And they clearly have the likeness rights to the main two actors, but like in very limited form. Like you'll see posters of Alex Pettifer on the wall where it's just his photo from the movie, like it's the real guy. And then you see the in-game renderings, and it just looks like it's done in MS Paint. Yeah. Like,
it's incredible. And then the other fun fact. So like, you know, oh, okay. So I've also known from the Jenny Nicholson video that the alternate ending is used in the Wii game. I don't know if they like hadn't picked which ending yet when they produced it, but they did. So since you used the alternate ending, you'd think that like maybe the final mini game is like dodging a bullet or like an operator simulator getting the bullet out, like you know, something. No, the final mini game is a series of trivia questions about Machu Picchu. Right.
I forgot insane. You already said that, and I was really hoping it was like aiming the kiss simulator or something stupid.
Right?
Yeah.
But Machu Picchu trivia, why not?
Yeah. It's deeply insane as a product. It's one of these games I'm actually kind of tempted to finish because I think we're pretty close to the end, and it's just ridiculously bad. It's one of those, they give you rewards of like still images from the movie or very poorly edited clips from the movie as if that's a reward for anybody ever. Like everybody's like, oh yes, there's concept art in this. Woo. it's kind of one of those games. Like I think it might be the worst game we played, but it's bad in such an entertainingly batshit way.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting. Cause like we already mentioned that you're not playing as Kyle or Lindy.
Yeah.
But like you don't, like you have no goal, as you're just like hitting beats of this movie. They're not like, hey, try to become the most popular girl at school, or like, hey, try to fund your own trip to Machu Picchu. Like, there's no motivation. You're
there's
just
nothing.
Like,
and like
every single thing that you do is something somebody else asked you to do for relatively no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's just kind of a nothing of a character, you know. And I think I've talked about this before, but I think a good bad game is harder to pull off than a good bad movie, because you need to engage with it in a different way. It needs to be entertaining on a different level than a movie does. So like, you can make allowances. So usually a bad video game, you just stop playing it. A bad movie, you might like stick around and watch the bad shit. I feel like this is low stakes and stupid and short enough that you could kind of play through this and just marvel at how poorly designed it is, like, at every frame.
I'm glad we stopped playing, but I could see just like having fun while doing something else.
There's no way this is a long game.
No,
right?
I think
like,
we were the third of the way through.
We were pretty close to the end.
I don't know if we were close. How many games did they save?
Should make your own walkthrough so that all the future people will have a walkthrough.
Yes. Oh, I could be the definitive source on this game. I could give the detailed notes on how to do everything.
Games did we play? Okay, the dancing one.
There was the cursing one.
The
voting. The voting. Faces.
What's the faces one?
That's the first one where their faces were up. We had to point the signs and like.
Oh, I missed that one. Okay, so we were like a third way through it. Because then there was also the locker.
Did we do the lockers?
So here's my question.
And I don't know if it counts. I don't know if like taking photos or traveling back and forth to lockers counts.
Like, so do we just not cover the portion of the movie? I still have questions, so I would like you to play through it. Like, do we just not cover the portion of the movie where like Lindy and Hunter are just like in their apartment? Because
yeah, that's the thing. If we make the character like tertiary to everything, we are functionally removing them for most of the movie because he doesn't go back to high school until the
maybe
last,
there's
like
a Halloween
seconds.
Party scene, because that could be something that she's plausibly at, or he
every time she leaves the house you're there in the background.
I'm gonna dig deep into this and I'll report back. We'll see how far this goes.
We'll accidentally find ourselves on the scene of the crime where he rescues her. But the question that I have is, do you think they saved their best mini games for last, or put their best mini games at the front?
Oh, I think we were playing the prize pigs.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we were. I think these were the show ponies.
I also want to know how hard the Machu Picchu trivia is.
Because that's the thing. I've been to Machu Picchu. I don't know if I would do very well at any of the trivia. I was so tired that day.
Also, the game's weren't easy. I don't know if they were fun challenging, but we like did fail at two of them on the first go.
The Hex well, like, one was also bullshit.
Because they were very unclear on how to play.
That's part of it too. It would tell you like before it would give you some, it wouldn't really give you instructions. It would be like, like what just, it say?
Well, yeah.
Toss out the bad ballots, but it didn't like tell you what constituted a bad ballot.
Yeah. What was
or
bad?
Or it was like unlock these lockers and you were able to figure it out. It kind of like vibrated when you were on the right number.
Yeah.
But like, it didn't tell you like, you know, I feel like usually in a good game, it's like when you feel the vibration, that's the right number.
Yes. Yeah,
there was none
like
of that.
That. Yeah.
I think the most clear one was the first one and then it was all downhill from there.
Yeah, pretty much.
The first one was just basically point and shoot at all the bad signs and then.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should have known what we were getting into at that moment.
Truly a fascinating artifact. Like, if you have a Wii and $5, that's all this cost me on eBay. This is not
amazing.
A sought-after or beloved game. It has basically no footprint, but it is bizarrely terrible in a fun kind of a discovery way.
Which I feel is similar for the movie. Like, I don't know if the movie goes, like, full The Room bad for me. But like it's
approaching
it wasn't
like,
hard to watch. I enjoy watching The Room from time to time.
I think it was more boring than The Room. I think it had longer stretches where like nothing was happening.
Not a lot happens.
See, in The Room at least had like some mildly quotable things like, oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hugely quotable. Yeah. Every second of that movie is quotable.
There's a lot of quotable stuff in the beginning of the movie when when Kyle is terrible. Like he has all these quippy, like shitty insults that like no one would say in real life. He's
yeah,
like,
his thing is embrace the suck.
Embrace the suck. And he said, what does he say? Like tattoo something. Frank skank.
Yeah,
skank.
They were really trying for some kind of like snappy Joss Whedon-y kind of dialogue at some places, and they were failing so hard. It's really hard to pull that off. We are actually almost gone longer than the movie at this point. Like if we make it five more minutes, we've gone longer than this movie.
How long was this movie?
This was 1 hour and 26 minutes.
Like 6 hours.
One of those movies where it's like, thank God it's so short. Yeah. Yeah. We appreciate that.
But
it's
still
so short.
It felt mildly long. Because it's just like you have it takes place over a year. It takes so long before he even turns into a beast. It takes even longer, like before Lindy arrives.
Yeah,
there, like the movie is filled with such nothing.
Yeah, it's absolutely nothing.
I would love to know if they filmed other stuff that got cut. If they were like, shit, Vanessa Hudgens and Alex Pettiford don't have chemistry. We have to make this a less central part of the movie, or what?
I think this was kind of for the movie. I think this was kind of a point where they're like, all right, maybe we don't adapt every YA novel. Maybe they're not all going to be Twilight. You know, it's not until the year after this, there's The Hunger Games. And I think that kind of shifts the YA trajectory away from like tortured romance and more into action, social satire, things like that, which was a better shift, I think. But
better movie, too.
There was a long stretch where like every YA novel that vaguely looked like Twilight on the cover was getting a film adaptation, and they're pretty much universally terrible. And I think this was maybe finally the one that broke that streak. They're like, all right, let's just stop. Sorry, we're not going to adapt to everything.
Yeah, it's interesting that like some executive thought this was like equivalent to Twilight, because there's no him.
You know,
maybe were they trying to imply in the movie that like beastly in his beastly form, that's what enabled him to like fight the drug dealer and like do all that stuff.
There were certain homages to superhero dumb, but in the superhero tropes.
Yeah.
But they never doubled down on
it. They never like made that explicit that was part of the curse. Cause I feel like that was maybe a little bit of appeal of like actual Beast and Beauty and the Beast. Like, oh, he's also a protector and scary.
Yeah. No, they were very vague about that. They could have like leaned into that a little bit, but it also was a movie that did not have a lot of action. You know, like what's he going to use his powers for? Playing ping pong with blind Neil Patrick Harris?
Golf. He built a greenhouse.
Well, he built a greenhouse with his superpowers, just like the Hulk would do.
They also hit golf balls, I hope, into the river, but it's not really clear.
It definitely was not facing
the
river.
They're hitting a building in New York City. They're killing people. We all
with
heard
the
about the pennies,
velocity of a golf ball.
Yeah, we all heard about the pennies off the Empire State Building. Yeah.
But we also saw that because we all watched Mythbusters. We saw the Mythbusters episode.
That's true. All right, let's wrap up Beastly, because I think we've milked all we can out of this particular stone. Thank you so much.
I feel like
here,
we
Whitney.
Can yell about
it
longer.
My honor.
We appreciate you bringing this movie to us. I appreciate crossing it off the list.
I cannot.
I don't think it was on the list until I. Until I put it on the list.
It was on the list. It was low.
It's a surprisingly long list.
It's a very long list.
I thought I had told you to anyway.
No, I put it on. Okay. Don't worry.
I cannot wait until this drops out of my memory.
Yeah. Won't take long, I don't think. Won't take long. That's not a comment on your memory either. That's a comment on this movie.
Yeah, look, I will replace it for a Limp Bizkit lyric, and I'll be happy.
There you go. Whitney, do you have anything to plug or promote or tell anybody about?
We haven't done our rankings.
Oh, yeah, we have to do our rankings. God, yes.
We almost unranked
Hold
this.
That plug, Whitney.
We cannot let this go without a rank.
Because we need to rank this on a scale of good movie, good game to bad movie, bad game, or some random mixture in between. Oh, can I put some money down on where we're going to come up on this?
I don't know.
J-Ban, why don't you start us off? J-Ban. I feel like
I'm going to say a bad movie and atrocious game.
See? Yeah. Yeah. I think you're being kind on both fronts.
Yeah. I think pretty bad movie. I think incredibly bad game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad movie, bad game, but in a fun way. I think they're not just like bad, oh, I can't watch this. Yeah.
I actually liked the movie less than the game. I think the game is more inept.
It's more interesting. Yeah.
It's bad in a more interesting way.
Wondering what's about to happen.
It's true. I genuinely did not know what would come next in this game because it was making some really bad shit out of nowhere choices. That being said, it is pretty embarrassingly laughably bad. I think this might be the lowest combination of movie and game that we've discussed so far, for me at least. It's definitely up there. All right, now let's revert back. Do you have anything to plug or promote or tell anybody about?
Have you guys ever gotten people to come to improv based off of these plugs, to your knowledge?
I don't know. We should plug that we do improv more.
We should plug that we do improv, and then we should tell them to tell us if they came.
Find me if you come. It'll be a small theater. Anyway, I'm directing a show called Boo 85 come June. It's like going to be based off of the Hulu show Pen 15, based off of your awkward middle school memories.
Yes.
So come see that, and if you do, tell me you heard about it on this podcast.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. We're in Austin, incidentally. Yes. If you're looking for what city to go to.
Oh, yeah, the Hideout Theater in Austin,
yes,
Texas.
Same theater, different month. I'm directing a James Bond show called Spy Another Day. So. Hey.
Which you can see me star in.
Yeah. Starring in. Starring
But not Steve, that. Because he's going to be out of town.
That's true. Whatever. Yeah. No, where was I? I forget what I was doing. Remember. Oh no! Yeah, I'm in Oregon show. That week. Yeah, I'm in another
Oregon
show
and
too.
Another show.
I'm in a White Lotus improv show called The Black Lily. I'm in a Scooby Doo improv show for kids called Those Meddling Kids. I'm in a sketch troupe. I'm in multiple different shows all over town. It's lots of fun. We do lots
Those
of stuff.
Those Meddling Kids.
And we don't promote it enough. We should. But yeah, if you're in the Austin area, come check out local comedy. There's a lot of amazing people like Whitney here. Thank you so much
for
being here.
Thank you so much
here.
For having me. Yeah. I've never
Thank
been on a podcast
coming.
Before.
Well, you did great. You did awesome.
Thank you.
So next week, we are going to be talking. We're going to be shifting gears. We're going to be taking off from Earth and heading out into space for 1984's The Last Starfighter.
Which I was really excited when I heard the name of, not related to the Star Wars in any way, shape, or form.
Not really, but it's Star Wars-y.
As this is to Twilight, that is to Star Wars of like trying to copy and jump on trend?
No, it's its own thing. It's its own thing. Yeah.
Let's just say the guy who wrote Ready Player One ripped a lot from this movie.
Oh.
He really likes this concept of like, it's about a boy who's so good at a video game that it turns out that video game is a secret recruiting tool for an alien battle, and he gets taken up into space to go fly Star Cruisers. Fun movie. I've only seen it once, so I'm excited to revisit it. It's probably been like 20 years since I've seen it, so I'm excited
heard of
to revisit
it for the first time 2 days ago.
There you go. I think you're going to like
Maybe
it.
Maybe 3 days ago.
All right. Yeah, it's a cult favorite for a lot of people around my age. So
yeah, 100%.
I'm eager to check it out and hear what y'all think about it. So tune in next week for The Last Starfighter. So long. Uggos, I'm the prettiest one. Ha ha ha. Vote for me to be prettiest, man. That's what he says in the movie. I swear I'm good at improv. Okay, see you guys. Bye.